And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, continuing our season previews team by team to get you ready for the 2023 fantasy baseball season. We stick with the NL East, and I think this might actually be the last team in the NL East, now that I think about it, in the Washington Nationals, the once heralded World Series winning Washington, not too long ago, folks. Like, this isn't even your mom and dad's Washington Nationals. This is our Washington Nationals. And they still have fantasy relevance. I'm going to say that much. There's still some on the roster. And in order to break this all down with me as a friend of the show, a friend of mine, had the pleasure of meeting this wonderful individual in Arizona this past year. You can find her work at fantrax.com. She does football and baseball, so she brings the heat year round. On Twitter at LK Auerbach. Lauren, how are we doing, my friend?
Bubba, it's good to see you again. It's fun to be on here. I've been listening to some of your team previews before, so I'm excited to be a part of it, covering the amazing, exciting Washington Nationals.
Yeah, I tried to build it up as best I could, but you guys got a great ballpark to go to, so that's fun. You drop off on the metro or the train, whatever you guys call it, right outside.
Takes you right in.
Let's look at the positives here, right?
You have to find the positives this season with this team, but yes, find them where you can and run with them.
I'm 100% with you, so I'm looking forward to this. Before we get into it, I mentioned like your Twitter and everything, but like, let the people know. Like, this is one thing I gave you a hard time for in Arizona. What do you got going on?
I know. Well, like you had said, I mean, I do, kind of football and baseball content over at Fantrax, and I will start doing kind of more weekly baseball kind of off-season stuff in the next couple of weeks by the end of February, and kind of run with that, do probably a weekly write-up throughout the regular season. I was talking to you earlier, I was saying I was kind of slowly transitioning my football brain over to my baseball brain in the meantime, and have been doing, you know, taking part in kind of Fantrax staff rankings for baseball. So if anyone's interested, they should check that out. But yeah, you can find me over at Fantrax. And like you said, at LK Auerbach is my Twitter handle, which I am not the best person on Twitter, but we are going to try and remedy that this season, Bubba, I promise. Yeah.
And I only gave Lauren a hard time about that. Well, like, there's a long story, backstory to Arizona. I'm not going to tell you. It was like the most ironic thing in the world. It was just awesome. But I want her to promote more because she's very good at what she does and needs to get out there. So I was giving her a very hard time, because one of the jokes I always tell people is, if I'm not giving you a hard time, it's probably because I don't care about you. So this has to happen. So we'll pay Michael Simeone to run your Twitter account.
There you go. Like, he wants one more thing to run.
Exactly. A curmudgeon. All right. Let's talk Washington Nationals here.
Let's do it.
For those that are curious, I'm using ADP from like the last six or seven draft champions drafts, so they will fluctuate as you listen to the show. But we'll start with the leadoff man here, and one Lane Thomas. And I'll just preface this out the gate. One good thing about teams like the Nationals, I just did the Orioles before this episode and a couple other, I guess, not as high leverage teams as you'd expect. Their values technically, potentially, in drafts. That's one of the fun things about them. And when it comes to Lane Thomas, when you look at his ADP over the last, you know, week or so, he is coming in pretty, pretty cheap at 273. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of, can he do it for a whole year with power, speed, and whatnot? So what's your thoughts on Lane Thomas this season?
Yeah, I mean, I like Lane Thomas. Last season was his first season with the Nationals, and he started off slow, but he started to figure things out in June, and he slowly worked his way up to the lineup. And as you've referenced, he started leading off. He started exclusively leading off for the team since September 1st, and he's penciled in to lead off this season, which is good. And one of the things that I really like about Lane Thomas is that he's fast. You know, his sprint speed is in the 95th percentile, and he has above average plate discipline metrics. You know, he's got an 89% Z contact, as well as an 81.3% overall contact rate, and he doesn't chase a ton. So to me, I like metrics like that. He's fast, he's leading off. His quality of contact metrics are just about average, a little bit below average, but he does have contact to work with. And so I like that. And, you know, a lot of projections have Thomas, you know, kind of as a mid-teen home run guy with 8 to 10 steals. But I really like him to be a little bit more aggressive on the steal front. You know, I would kind of penciling in, 12. I think he could be, his upside is a 2015 guy with a 240 batting average. But the reason why I'm a little bit more aggressive on steals with this guy and a guy that we'll talk about in a couple minutes is that this team has, in order to score runs, they have to play small ball. There is no big power bat on the Washington Nationals. And so I think in order to score runs, they're going to have to be aggressive on the base paths. And if you look at Lane Thomas, he was 8-for-12 last season in stolen bags, but 11 of those 12 attempts came in the second half of the season. So I think that that's something I like to carry over for him this season. And I like him. I think that he's probably going, what'd you say, about like 270?
Like 272-ish.
Yeah, so like maybe like the 65th outfielder off the board or something along those lines. And I have no problem getting him there. I think he's a super solid kind of fourth outfielder. And again, I think really kind of pushing aggressiveness on the base paths. And also just real quickly on that base path point, some of the new rules, we don't know how it will pan out, but with pitch clock, bigger base sizes, these are things that may actually help this team if they're going to be aggressive on the base paths.
And this is why I have people like Lauren on the show, folks, because I had like queued up just in case, but she nailed it. One of my co-hosts, Ryan Bloomfield, that I have on, he does the Bloom boards, of course. And last week he had one on first half, first, second half, stolen base attempts. And the differences between the two, one attempt in the first, 11 in the second half, just as Lauren mentioned, was the biggest like differential kind of or tied for in baseball. And that says a lot because a lot of people drafted Lane with the idea of steals to go with a little bit of power. So now what if you get 11 and 11 attempts in both halves? Yeah. Like you're saying, it just changes things a ton, the different rules and whatnot. And when he's getting drafted right now, he's right next to Jesse Winker, kind of a little behind Austin Hayes. So it makes Lane Thomas very interesting, especially if he does get back to that stolen base world. So I'm 100% on board with you on that one. I think this was the gentleman you were kind of hinting at a second ago, and I'm really curious your thoughts because I kind of have a weird like optimistic man crush on CJ Abrams. Like I'm really, the prospect pedigree, the speed we've seen, a little bit of pop, decent batting average. His ADP is 224. The reason I like CJ, and I'll let you get your thoughts here, is I do think the speed's legit. I think that's a great thing. And the thing is, he's been a high-level prospect, and he's kind of not given us what we wanted, but he's also been yo-yoed so much that he's never really gotten a chance where now the Nats have nowhere else to go. Like, they traded for him, for one, so they wanted him. And like I said, there's no one to take his job. Why not get a full year to make this happen? And he's predicted it second, which is great. So I hope I didn't steal everything, but what's your thoughts on CJ Abrams?
No, you didn't, but you made a lot of great points. And I am all in on CJ Abrams this season. And, talking about just real quickly, like you kind of need to find your moments to pick with this team and your players to be excited about. For me, CJ Abrams is the player that I'm most excited about on this team. Like you said, he's this top prospect. He's a speed guy. He's got a little bit of pop. And this will be his first full season with the Nationals. And, he's interesting to me because, he actually cracked the opening day roster with San Diego last season, but he really struggled out of the gate. He was sent back to, AAA, came back up, once he fixed whatever he was going to fix, but he just didn't get, consistent playing time. He never played more than 15 games a month with San Diego. So he came over with the Soto trade. He was in the minors a little bit here, but then he really started getting consistent playing time in the middle of August with the Nationals. And that's where you really started to, he came on strong. He basically had a strong September. And I think that that's no coincidence. It's because he had consistent playing time, and he ended up working his way up the lineup just like Lane Thomas. And in the final, nine games of the season, CJ Abrams was batting second. He's again penciled to bat at the second in the order, and that's good because he is a speed guy. And looking at his September numbers to the end of the season, he ended up with a 95 WRC plus, a 305 WOBA, and a 309 on base percentage. And so he wasn't reaching those numbers prior to that. And I think that this really had a lot to do with consistent playing time. Now, he doesn't have a ton of like pop. He has some pop, but he had a 2.1 barrel rate, and he did have some chase issues last season, and had issues batting against lefties. So he may, if he sits, that would be the only reason he may skip some at bats is against lefties. But you're right, Bubba. I mean, I think that the playing time is there. You started to see him getting more comfortable last season. And he had a similar thing with Lane Thomas. You know, he also started, I think he stole seven bases, I believe, eight bases, but six of those attempts came with Washington, and that was from August 15th on. So again, I think this is going to be an aggressive team on the base paths, and I expect both Lane Thomas and CJ Abrams to be a heavy part of that.
And it makes a lot of sense, like you said it with Lane Thomas, and now with CJ, is it's just team context where mm-hmm. their Nationals aren't going to be boppers. Like Soto's gone, Harper's gone.
There's
no one there. No one's gone, even when he was healthy. There's no one to hit home runs. So they have to manufacture, which makes a ton of sense. Mm-hmm. So that's why you acquire an Abrams. That's why you have a Thomas, and you hit him at the top of the order and see what happens. So it's more than just, you know, I can sit there and spout off that he's a prospect and this and that. You combine that, though, with the context, like you're saying, and it just kind of, at least, you know, in our world, we're trying to predict. And that's the best you can do, is kind of put the pieces together. So I think that's interesting. A quick question on CJ mm-hmm. for you, though. He's going around picking 223, as I mentioned. Would you be okay if you just waited on shortstop as your shortstop, or would you prefer him as a middle infielder on your roster?
I actually, in a Gladiator league, I waited at the position, and I ended up taking CJ Abrams. And so I'm okay with that. I'm really buying into him this season. Good. And it really is for that power appeal. I do think, you know, keep in mind, he is 22. I think power will develop, but if we're talking about 2023, you know, redraft leagues, don't expect power. Like, his fantasy value lies with his legs. So I am in on him, and I did wait on the position and took him. So,
perfect. And that's another great point. He's 22 years old. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. And the last thing I'll say on him is, you know, the barrel rate, people will say it was 2.1 hard hit, mm-hmm. but his max EV was 109.6.
Yeah.
So when he does hit the ball, or he can, he's basically proving he can hit the ball hard. Now it's like you said, as he grows and develops, like, just translate a little bit. And mm-hmm. even if he hits like 10 to 15 homers and then steals like he can, that could be pretty, pretty nice.
Yeah. No.
All right, I'll probably butcher this last name because I've said it for over a year now, and I don't think I say it the same way more than twice in a row. Is it Meneses or Meneses?
Meneses.
Meneses. I knew Joey it was one Meneses. Of the two. I told you it's one of the two all the time. Joey Meneses is a guy that I cannot wrap my head around. I'll be 100% honest. He hit 324 with 13 home runs last year. Mm-hmm. He was amazing. He had 20 home runs in AAA over 96 games. The part I think I struggle with, he's going to be 31, so it's kind of a late bloomer mm-hmm. situation is the way I look at it. Mm-hmm. ADP of 203. So it's like we saw the skill set, but was this like a one-year wonder, or is this something we can kind of hope for in 2023?
Yeah. And I think when we're talking about, and I think like you were not, this is a common thought about Joey Meneses. What do we make of him going into 2023? Because essentially he is like the Nationals power bat, you know, talking about, we don't have a 30 home run bat. We do have Joey Meneses. There may be a couple of guys, but this is really, this is it. This is it for Washington, where, you know, like you said, he had kind of all these great power stats. You had to keep in mind that this was a 56 game sample with him. He's spent 10 years in the minors. He's 30 years old. But he got called up after the Soto trade, and he really just kind of ran with his opportunity. And it was a really good feel story for the team, but also for the fan base that was just gutted, you know, with Soto and Bell going. So he was a nice story kind of in the second half. And yeah, it's like, what do you make of him kind of going forward? You know, he was aided. He did have some luck. He had a 370 BABIP, which, you know, definitely led the team. And I didn't check the league, but it was probably up there in terms of, you know, luckiness. So regression will hit, but I still expect like 20 to 25 home runs from him, or probably 23, 25 home runs, I would say. I wouldn't bank on much more than that. Regression will be there, but I get if, you know, like what you were saying, if you don't, you're not sure if you can buy into him because he's 30 years old. He spent 10 years in the minors. Like, what are the odds on him kind of sustaining this for a full season? But there isn't a ton to, I think, like, you can't really poke a ton of holes in his skill set, which is like average ish, but there are also some good signs. You know, he has a solid plate approach. You know, he finished, you know, with a 6.3 walk rate and a 21.7 strikeout rate. So that's average. That's good. But his quality of contact metrics, like he hit the ball 41.7, his hard hit rate was 41.7, which is near elite. And he had a 9.9% barrel rate, which is above average. And, you know, his home run per fly ball rate was 25.5%, which is also elite. That will definitely come down. But he has, you know, above average contact rates. He doesn't chase a ton. So it's not like he's this big free swinger that was just getting lucky. And when he had contact, he hit the ball well. Like, he has some solid skills there. They're not amazing, but I think they'll keep him afloat. And I think that it's good enough for, like I said, kind of 23, 25 home runs. And I really do. I think you're looking at the Nationals power bat with Joey Meneses. I think, you know, I think he's currently going off the board as like the 20-ish, first baseman. And if he falls, I think in drafts, I'm fine kind of taking him on a discount. Just understand what you're going to get. But I'm kind of taking glass half full with Meneses versus, what did I say? I'm taking glass half full versus half full. Empty. Yeah.
I there was a lot of good for me to hear in that because there's only so many players you can really get like a good feel for as you do research, especially in baseball with so many players. And Meneses is one where I just like, it's tricky where, and it's a lot of what you said, because you look at his ADP, even over the last six drafts, and he is like the 21st first baseman off the board, but his ADP is 203, but he's gone as high as 168.
That's a little high.
As low as 234. So it's like that range shows you I'm not alone on like figuring you're either in or you're out. It feels like he's got such a wide array.
Absolutely.
So he could easily be a guy though, if he falls closer to that 234 where I'm sitting in a draft like 220, like, okay, now I'm ready. I'll take you. I'm not going to get you by 170. Not a chance. But so he's definitely interesting. I looked at his projections while you're talking, and even like the smart projection guys, like you said, 20 to 22 home runs. The counting stats won't be there because it's the Nats. That's the shame of it all, but he's not going to crush you. So maybe I need to change my thoughts, like not go all in on Joey, but at least not like cross him off.
I mean, it's like I kind of view him as he's not a 30 home run bat, but I think he's better than a 20 home run bat. So I'm going to split in the middle, say he's like 25 and just kind of go with that. And you know, I think I had him in my rankings over at Fantrax. He may have been like the 23rd first baseman off the board for me. So, you know, in that neighborhood as kind of ADP'd, you know, but yeah, getting into that 170 zone, like that's too rich, but just understand what you're getting.
We'll see how it goes with him. I could see a Trey Mancini type profile there, which would be quite interesting. So that would be fun. Let's talk what else is fun is Kyber Ruiz. And I was all in on Kyber last year, and it was kind of a rough go all around. Still at 251, which is good for catcher. Power never really materialized. Didn't expect a ton. And he stole six bags, which, oh my goodness, maybe this is a Nationals thing. But I guess I expected a little more batting average from Ruiz from what we've seen in the minor leagues. It could also have been his first full season in the bigs, new team. Could have been a lot of question marks. I don't know what you're seeing or hearing in Washington, but he's the 14th catcher off the board at pick 194 right now. So he's not costing you a ton. Just doesn't really add much outside of maybe a good batting average. So what's your thoughts on Ruiz?
Yeah, you know, I mean, like you said, I mean, I think people kind of walked away from his first full season with the Nationals feeling a little underwhelmed. I think especially when you talk about Kybert Ruiz, you know, he's got elite plate skills, you know, K rate, he's got this high batting average floor, but he walked away with kind of a 251 batting average. And he did have an expected 277 batting average. But yeah, I mean, there's a little power. I don't know where those six steals came from. Again, maybe it is just, you know, Nats being like, we got to score a run somehow. But I wouldn't bank on that this season. You know, I would maybe do a couple, you know, stolen bases, from him, but, he is what he is, which is just, he's a really good contact hitter with elite plate skills, and a little bit of pop. Now, you know, he did improve a little bit in terms of quality of contact last season. When I say these numbers, it's still below average, but he did improve. You know, he brought his, you know, hard hit rate from 30.4 to 32.3, and then a 2.5 barrel to 3.7% barrel. I think that there is room for improvement there, but don't pencil in, you know, I would say 10 to 13, you know, home runs. Look, I mean, this is a deep position. Kybert Ruiz is not flashy by any means. No one is out there kind of trying to reach for Kybert Ruiz, but at the same time, there's a high batting average floor. Say he gets you, yeah, you know, 13 home runs, you know, combined 100, you know, runs, RBI, couple of steals. I think that batting average will go up to, you know, kind of 260, 265 range. And what is that? I mean, that's like a boring guy, but he's not hurting you anywhere. And I think that you just have to understand what he is when you get him. And he's a perfectly solid, reliable, high floor, you know, second catcher, you know, and that's how I view him. It's like, you know, he's easy to gloss over, but he's also not hurting you anywhere. And, you know, if you want to take a boring catcher, this is him. But I do think in that kind of 14, if you said he's the 14th catcher off the board, I think that's right about where he should be.
Yeah, I like that ADP because I think last year where it kind of got tough with him, and I was high on him too, is he was going much higher, where now he slots in perfectly as a catcher too, like you said. And when you get into catcher twos, it can get dicey at times.
Yep.
And you got, like you mentioned, the floor, especially batting average, like that 251 might be the worst we see from him. Like that's what's crazy, because like you mentioned, the contact skills, he doesn't strike out like – yeah, people are going to kill me in Toronto. His contact skills and like play discipline resemble Mr. Alejandro Kirk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the results obviously have varied. I'm not going to say by any means Ruiz is going to be what Kirk is, but to have that kind of plate discipline and plate skills is promising.
Yeah.
He's going to be 25. So again, we're talking about a young guy trying to figure it out. And I've talked to a lot of people about these catchers and especially young guys. Like I said at the very beginning, it's his first year running a team behind the dish.
Yep.
So like that takes a lot out of a guy that could take away from his approach to the plate and something just to monitor. And he's a solid catcher too. So I'm much more intrigued with where he's going in drafts right now.
Yeah.
All right. The Candyman. I've always been a little biased. I love Candelario. Mm-hmm. I think there's something there. It has not obviously happened yet, but again, going to be 29 this year. Still not that old yet.
Yep.
He's out of Detroit. We know that ballpark. Washington can play lively, especially the summertime. ADP of 388, new place out of Detroit. Mm-hmm. Not saying he's going to be a world beater, but I'm not saying I'm not intrigued, especially with an ADP of 387.
Yeah.
Like it's intriguing to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think you had me on your show last year, and we were talking about kind of boring players, and we both were talking about, you know, we love you know, Jamer Candelario, the Candyman, and I liked him going in, you know, to last season. I thought he could build off of his 2021 season, you know, where, you know, he led the position in doubles. I think he tied actually the league in for team high in doubles with 42 doubles last season. Finished with the 120 WRC plus. It's like, yeah, you know, but it, you know, things didn't really happen. And when you look at some of his numbers, you know, the one thing that really stands out, you know, his batting average just completely cratered. You know, he had a 271 batting average in 2021, and last season it fell down to a 217 batting average. And you know, looking at a lot of his metrics, his quality of contact metrics, his plate discipline metrics, those all are around his league average. It's just what stands out is, you know, he had a 6% walk rate last season, which is a career worst for him. You know, he has a 9.6% career walk rate, and you know, the chase rate, his chase rate just like jumped last season from 32.3 to 36.8. And he's got a career 31.6 chase rate. So, you know, if he can kind of rein that in, I mean, I think we know what the Candyman is at this point, which is kind of a 15 to 18 home run guy. I will say that, and he doesn't bring any steals to the table. I think his batting average should jump up a little bit. You know, but I would just kind of pencil in maybe like 240, 245, just because I don't know if he does, you know, get more patience at the plate, or if he just continues to kind of chase at pitches outside the zone. So I will say with him though, there's a little bit of upside, which, and it's you referenced this, Bubba, where you know, yes, he's going from one bad team to another bad team, but he does have a park upgrade, and he's never hit 20 home runs before. He's topped out at 19, but I feel like Candelario, I would not be surprised if he hits the 20 home run mark this year. And like, that's it, 2021. Like, and that would be an upside, but that's, Outside of that, I think that we kind of know what we're getting with him. But there is a little bit of maybe a 20 home run upside with him this season. I wouldn't be surprised.
Insert Jack Nicholson shaking head gif. Yes, because that's, I think when we talked about him before, the thing I've always loved about him is he's a doubles machine, which we've seen, like, and it's not a great comparison again, but Machado was that guy and learned how to elevate the baseball.
Yeah.
Get the dude out of Detroit. Like, look at Castellanos when he went to the Wrigley. Like, you just get him out of Detroit and you never know what could happen. So yeah. He's still so young. And like you said, at worst, he's going so late as a, like in a draft champions format, as a backup third baseman, a corner infielder, not a bad scenario.
Yeah.
Let's talk Luis Garcia, who roster resource has platooning. I hope not, but we'll see how that goes. Mm-hmm. He's going around pick 307, brings a pretty decent batting average floor, little power, little speed. What are your expectations in 2023 for Luis Garcia?
Yeah, we saw he kind of came up in June. He was called up in June. And, you know, he's a young guy. He's 22 years old, but he does have pop and a little bit of speed. And that comes with a plus batting average. So that's always good. You know, his big thing is he didn't really walk last season. He had a 2.9 walk rate. Overall, but the good thing is that he consistently increased his walk rate each month from June on. And it basically went from 0.9% to 5.6%. So from between June and October, you know, he went up, which is good. It's something that you want to see. You know, he doesn't really elevate the ball yet. So he'll probably kind of hover around, you know, 50%, ground ball rate, which will probably ultimately kind of cap his speed. His home runs. But you know, again, he's 22, and I think that he can improve on some of his contact rates. I think in terms of platooning, I think he should get playing time. But yes, I think that there is a possibility he could sit against lefties. But, you know, a lot of projections have him going for, you know, kind of like a 12 to 15 home run guy combined, you know, 120, you know, runs and RBI, you know, with a handful of steals and a 260 batting average, you know, that's definitely serviceable for where he's going. And if he ends up platooning, then, you know, you can find someone else, you know, if you're solely relying on Luis Garcia. But it's really kind of that pop and speed mix with the plus batting average. So hopefully they let him kind of run as much as he can, because I think that in terms of playing time, because I think that there's not a lot, you know, kind of waiting in the wings. So I think that they'll run with him, but he could lose playing time to the lefties.
Okay. Other than that, it's a lot of platoon stuff. Corey Dickerson's there. Dominic Smith's there. Like, we like the platoon options. Victor Robles maybe one day figures out. Yeah. He's still he's only going to be 26, which is crazy.
I know.
He's been around forever.
Every year it's the same, yeah. Victor Robles. Yeah.
Is there anybody else worth, like, I know we could keep an eye on guys, and I've streamed Corey Dickerson multiple times last year when they had a bunch of right-handers and the Cardinals are facing. But are there any of these guys, like, worth drafting, or is it more just kind of like a wait and see approach with Washington?
No, I don't know that they're worth drafting. I would say you mentioned Corey Dickerson. That's the only one that I, you know, would maybe pop for me a little bit. We kind of know what Corey Dickerson is at this point, but you know, he signed to play every day as, you know, an outfielder in Washington. And you never know, you know, with some of these kind of, you know, 1 year veterans, change of scenery, sometimes it brings out the best of them. I ultimately, in terms of your question, are they worth drafting? I don't think, unless in like really super deep leagues or a draft and hold or something, but I could see Dickerson. He could surprise you at certain points during the season. And I think he'll have his streamable moments for sure. Like, I think he could easily fall into some counting stats if he's playing every single day, for the most part, because it's just, there's not a lot of depth on this team.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Now it gets a little interesting. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the mound with the.
Do Washington we have to?
I know.
That's Do we have to?
When I typed this up, I was about to go. I still might. I'm going to probably combine some of these just because it's.
That's fine.
It's tricky.
Yep.
I did this with the A's too. Don't worry. Like, it got to a point where we don't need to talk about all of them unless you really want to.
Yep.
Josiah Gray is the name many people know because, again, once really heralded prospect, has the home run issues through the roof. He's going after pick 400, though. Still doesn't mean I love him. Yeah. But what are your thoughts on Josiah Gray coming into this season?
Yeah, I just real quickly, like before we kind of like just kind of get into some of these pitchers, when I was kind of digging into these numbers, I knew that the Washington, you know, starting rotation was bad. I did not realize, Bubba, how bad, just how bad it was. And I was just whoa. Yeah. It was the only team that had like a negative, you know, runs above replacement. And I think, or wins above replacement, sorry. And it was just like any really category that you want to kind of, you know, measure any of these guys, they were like dead last. So it was bad. But yeah, Josiah Gray, you know, with him, the main bullet points, you know, really are, you know, he walks too much, you know, and he did have his first full season in Washington last season. So I should note that. And I will say he had 154 strikeouts and 148.2 innings pitched, but it came with bloated ratios. He had a 5.02 ERA and a 1.36 whip. And that goes back to, you know, his walk issues. He walks too many batters. He has really problems keeping the ball in the yard. And this is both his walk rate and his home run rate are bloated. They were bloated last season when he made his debut, and they just mirrored each other like in another full season. You know, he had over a 10% walk rate in both last season and in 2021. And his, you know, home run per nine, you know, he had a 2.3 home run per nine and a 2.42 home run per nine in 2021. Now, just, you know, if your listeners don't know, like the league average for home runs per nine is 1.06. So he just has problems with the home run ball. He walks too many batters. You know, he has a fastball that really isn't that effective. You know, batters were teeing off of it last season to the tune of a 738 slug and a 304 batting average. And, you know, 24 of his 38 home runs came off of his fastball. His slider is much more of his whiff pitch, but it was also less effective this season. So I think that there's talent there with Josiah Gray. It's just like he needs to command the ball better. He needs to make like a pitch mix change or usage change. Something needs to be tweaked. And maybe that's all that it takes, but I'm kind of off of Josiah Gray this season. I was in last season, but now that he's kind of mirrored these like bad rates, I'm not really that interested this season, despite the fact he's going past 400.
Yeah, that's where I'm kind of like, if he does it, congratulations. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to get back in on with that home run problem, because if you throw a couple walks out there, it's tricky, but you never know. I'm going to put the two veterans together here. Mm-hmm. You have Patrick Cormann at an ADP of 712 and Trevor Williams with an ADP of 580. Mm-hmm. I have drafted Trevor Williams in like one of the last rounds of a DC because it's like, he's going to get innings. Yeah. You never know. I'm not in love with anything here. Mm-hmm. Any interest for fantasy with these two for you?
No, not fantasy wise. I do think the Trevor Williams signing is good for like the team in real life. But not really for fantasy. You know, you're talking about a low strikeout pitcher. He will, you know, he should get innings barring health. But yeah, I mean, he has a career 11.7 strikeout minus walk rate. So not really, you know, Patrick Corbin, Patrick Corbin, you will get innings with Patrick Corbin as well, but he's just such a head scratcher, you know, in the last couple seasons. And I think, but you kind of pick and choose your moments, I think, with Patrick Corbin. I will say that, you know, he had these, again, like bloated rates ratios, a 6.31 ERA and a 1.70 whip, but his ERA estimators said he pitched better than that. He had 4.21 xFIP and a 4.33 Sierra. But in the last two seasons, he's had an 11.1 strikeout minus walk rate. And you've just seen all the arrows kind of trending downwards in the last two seasons. And it all kind of begins with, you know, his slider that's just completely fallen off. So the thing is, the Nationals are going to continue to roll Patrick Corbin out, because he has this albatross contract. You know, him and Steven Strasburg, their combined payrolls make up over 60% of the total payroll of the Washington Nationals. And it just stings. And it's just like, you look at these guys and it's like, come on. But if you are looking for a plus with Corbin, he will give you innings. It kind of is at, well, what cost? And, But if you want to pick and choose and kind of stream him, like, I guess that's okay. He's like, would you say like he's 700? Like,
712.
Yeah. That's like really crazy. It's really crazy. But the Nationals will continue to roll him out. He was the opening day starter last season. I don't know if he's the opening day starter this season, but it's ugly. It's ugly out there, Bubba, with these pitchers.
Well, you mentioned Steven Strasburg, so that's mm-hmm. why I got you there. Mm-hmm. Do we expect much from him this year? Like,
no,
projections have like 15 starts, maybe.
No, and the thing is, it's like looking at kind of some of the beat writers out here. It's just he doesn't even have. There's no timetable with him, and he's getting over some sort of like thoracic. I don't even know what his rib. I think his rib injury or some sort of thoracic issue. Yeah. Yeah. But it's like you look at Steven Strasburg. You know, in the past, you know, two seasons, he's combined for like under 30 innings, and so it's just he's a little bit of a head case too. So I think that to answer your question, there is no he's TBD in terms of when he's going to come up, if you even see him this year at all.
Yeah. Probably smart not to.
Yeah.
I'll combine the two youngsters now. Mm-hmm. We had Cade Cavalli, who, you know, there were some high hopes for because the pedigree was there and strikeouts were there in his one outing. Everything else kind of got slippery. Mm-hmm. But his minor league numbers, not bad. Not bad. So that's promising.
Yeah.
You also have Mackenzie Gore, who we've seen goods and bads for with San Diego, came over with a CJ Abrams and the Soto deal. So what are we maybe thinking with Cavalli and Gore? Cavalli's ADP is 440 mm-hmm. and Gore's almost 400. So they're not that expensive. Is there any optimism on those two?
Yeah, I think this is a little bit of a wait and see for both. And I think we kind of need to see what they're doing in spring training because they're both coming off of injuries that kind of shut their seasons down last season prematurely. Both are penciled in, you know, to the starting rotation. I mean, there's one thing about this rotation is that it is super thin. And so, I think the Nationals do need to acquire, you know, another kind of veteran guy. But in terms of these young guys, you know, I know Gore is kind of going in the same neighborhood as Josiah Gray. I would rather take a shot on Mackenzie Gore at this point than Gray. I think that, you know, he really started the season well last season with San Diego, but then it really ended on a sour note, you know, and that's when you saw, you know, elbow inflammation issues, and that really kind of shut his season down. But the Nats were still confident in him. He was acquired in that Soto deal. There's kind of pros and cons with him. You know, walks were a little bit of an issue with Mackenzie Gore. And you know, in the majors as well as in the minors, you know, he relies on a fastball close to 60% of the time. But it's kind of like, it's his best pitch in terms of batting average against it, but it really only gets like, you know, 18.7% whiff rate. You know, his curveball and slider are his whiff pitches, but he doesn't command those very well. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag, but I will take that upside over Josiah Gray. But I do think I like Cade Cavalli a little bit more than Mackenzie Gore. Again, this is assuming everything works out well in spring training. You know, you mentioned Cavalli had that one start. It's a little bit more, missed than hit. But he does have a solid arsenal. He has three above average pitches that he can work with. He also has had a little bit of control and command issues, but he's also been a high strikeout pitcher. Again, I feel this is a theme with national pitchers, is that there's still, you know, some walk issues here, but assuming things kind of are all good in spring training with these guys, I think both Cavalli and Mackenzie Gore are perfect guys that you can take a shot on in terms of dart throws late in drafts, because assuming health, they're going to get playing time. There's no one else there in this rotation. And they do have upside, and there's going to be some growing pains with, I think, both of them, but I think they're absolutely, these are perfect dart throws to me, I think, at the tail end of drafts or deeper drafts.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a great call, especially the pedigree of Cavalli seems very intriguing. So I'm mm-hmm. there. Gore, I was all in on it until he kind of got hiccupy last year.
Yeah.
Let's head to the bullpen real quick. Mm-hmm. You got Kyle Finnegan slated to close. I think we all kind of expect him to start as the closer. We saw Carl Edwards get chances last year. Hunter Harvey's there, who I'm a big fan of a later round choice on. So how are you approaching the Nationals bullpen, assuming, you know, saves, we know saves will be limited, but how do you approach this come draft time? Because they're all coming reasonably priced.
Yeah. You know, I think that Kyle Finnegan, if this makes sense, I think he's a perfectly solid lower tier closer, if that makes sense. And he made improvements last season. He started throwing, and he basically kind of came into the closer season in the second half of the season. But, he started throwing his sinker a little bit more, and it worked well for him. You know, you saw his velocity increase from 95.7% to 97 miles per hour. And, you know, he cut his walk rate down. So these were all good signs. I think that he will be the closer. I think the only issue with Finnegan is, you know, he's the closer for the Nationals, but he could get traded. And if he does, you know, you referenced Hunter Harvey. You know, I think that's a really kind of sneaky pick there. You know, Harvey has always had, you know, problems staying healthy, but he is my guy, I think, especially like in, you know, draft and holds and stuff like that, that Hunter Harvey, you know, if you're going to take a shot on someone in this bullpen, to me, it's Hunter Harvey. I like him.
Yeah, Harvey's ADP is around 530 right now. So I've been trying to grab him late as a spec a lot.
Yeah.
Any other starters or relievers, any other pitchers? Like you said, they probably have to go acquire someone. Like, I don't know if we really want to discuss Paolo Espino as a spot starter, stuff like that. But anybody else?
Yeah, no. I mean, I think that unless they don't get anyone, you're going to see Paolo Espino. You're going to see Erasmo Ramirez. I think they have to get someone because I just – this rotation can go sideways real quickly. So I would like for them to add depth, and I don't know that even if they add depth, I think it's a good move probably in real life, but again, for fantasy purposes, I don't know how fruitful it will be.
All right, let's talk potential prospects we might see this year, because as much as we like to make fun of what's going on in the big league level, they have a lot of prospects. They land a lot of trades. I don't know how many will be impactful this year, but who are some of the names you are looking at potentially in drafts right now?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of drafts, I mean, you are looking at some of their prospects that will be kind of showcasing their skills for the first time for the Nationals this year, you know, in terms of like, you know, Cade Cavalli, you know, and CJ Abrams. And these are, you know, the Nationals have acquired, they had like this basically barren farm system, but with some of the big trades in the past two seasons, they have acquired some intriguing guys. Like I said, I think you're going to start seeing some this season, but in terms of like any of the guys that we haven't like talked about, maybe you'd see, you know, Robert Hassel this season. I think that may be a little bit too early. I think that he has a ETA of 2024, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see him because it's really going to be dependent on how well do we think ultimately. I'm fine with Lane Thomas, but with, you know, with Corey Dickerson, and who else do we have now? Oh, Victor Robles. You know, if that outfield doesn't really stand up, it's possible you see Robert Hassel up and he's got a little bit of power and speed. That would be interesting. I think it would be a little bit early, but I wouldn't rule that out either. So, he would be interesting. I think in terms of the closest person to 2023, that's who jumps to mind for me.
It's interesting. Like whenever I do these, I just kind of scroll on roster resources through the minor leagues and, you know, Carter Kieboom still down there. What could have been.
My I know.
Jeter Downs, who they got.
They got him in the Rule 5.
That's interesting.
That is honestly interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Because the Rule 5, you know, the whole, like, literally, if he doesn't stay, they ship him back. And again, at once heralded prospects. So you never know. Like, that, so that's at least, you know, piques my interest a little bit.
Yeah.
But, and then the name I've heard a lot, and I know nothing about prospects. And if it's not on your radar, then it's probably more of a long term or it's a long. And when I've heard it, people have flat out said long shot, but it's someone that I keep an eye on. And I think to me, it's a long shot because of Jeter Downs and because of Carter Kieboom being there. But Jake Alou's been mentioned a few times.
Yeah. I mean, he's sitting like right now, roster resource has him penciled in, you know, as you know, on the bench, you know. I don't know. I mean, he's someone that I actually don't know a ton about. I have, you know, kind of heard his name kind of bandied about, but I actually don't know a ton about him. Yeah.
No, it's fine. Like, I've looked at his page. And it's like, okay, he's a little power, a little speed, but I don't know why they'd rush him up over someone else that's there at that. So I don't know. There's a bunch of, like I said, scrolling through the list. They have a lot of options, but it's just, I don't know if they're quality options or what they are. So, and the way they built their team, it's like they're good with platooning cheap veterans for now. And it's almost like, let's suck again and get some more draft picks and then kind of start spending money. Maybe.
That's what it feels like. Yeah. I mean, this team is made up of a mix of top prospects, kind of 1 year veteran rentals, and really kind of fringy guys, like solid fringy guys, if that makes sense.
100%.
So, I mean, that is your 2023 Washington Nationals.
Well, I love it. And it was fun previewing them with you, Lauren. It was great. It was a, it's going to be an interesting year, to put it that way, and a very tough division. So we'll see how this goes. But before we head on out of here, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
You can catch me over at Fantrax, where I do both football and baseball. Obviously, now we're moving into the baseball season. So I will be starting kind of at the mid to end of the month, starting to do kind of a weekly article for the off season, and I will continue that throughout the regular season. And you can find me over at Twitter at LK Auerbach.
All righty. Well, Lauren, always a pleasure talking to you. I appreciate you joining me. I look forward to the next time we get to chat. Hopefully it's before November in Arizona. Let's put it that way.
We'll plan it. We'll calendar it.
All right. Sounds like a plan to me. Make sure you guys follow her on Twitter at LK Auerbach, and much, much more on Fantrax from her. And until next time, this is your Bench with Bubba, Washington Nationals season preview. Catch you guys next time.